This is the What Matters Most podcast. A 100% listener-supported program. And now, here is your host, Paul Samuel Dolman.
Welcome back to What Matters Most. Wow, we're over 800 shows, and the reason we've had so much success is because of today's guest who's come on multiple times and lit this thing up. He is just a force of the world of great light. He has a beautiful new book out, The Immutable Laws of the Akashic Field, Universal Truths for a Better Life and a Better World. And it even has an incredible foreword from my dear friend Marianne Williamson at the front. It's an honor to welcome back Mr. Irvin Laszlo. Thanks for coming on.
Well, Paul, wonderful to be here with you again.
I was curious, how did you and Marianne Williamson end up collaborating on this? It's a beautiful marriage here, spiritually and literally.
Well, we had exchanged before, we had a correspondence before. And so I saw these ideas are very important also in terms of putting them into practice politically. She's very much politically engaged, you know. So I thought it was something that would interest her. And we want to get these ideas of a more humanistic, more holistic ideas out to the public, but also among the leading people in politics. So I thought this would be a good match. And Marianne has agreed, and she's written a beautiful introduction.
Oh, so true. And I'm going to send a copy of this book to my dear friend, Congressman Tim Ryan, who is in the United States Congress via Ohio. I think Tim would love it. He meditates. It'd be right up his alley.
Yes, I think he would under the circumstances, absolutely.
Irvin, what is the Akashic Field? Is it similar to the Akashic Records that Edgar Cayce used to tap into? Can you tell us about it?
The Akashic comes from the Akasha, which according to the Hindu seers of some 3,000 years ago, is a deeper dimension of the universe. Today, in quantum physics, one will talk about the implicate order. 2,500 years ago, we talked about the Platonic realm of forms and ideas. But all this means, Akasha always means, and Akashic always means, that it's not on the surface. It's not something that's immediately observable. It's something which is underneath, which is displayed on the surface, but its roots are below. It's like an island on the sea, as William James has said. They are connected in the deep, but separate on the surface. So the Akashic is what connects. And that's why it's important to recall that if you talk about a field and not as something esoteric, but about the real field in the real universe, that we have to recognize that this field itself is a part of a deep reality and underlying the surface manifestations. It's like a net, like a fishing net, which is so fine that you don't see the nets. You see everything that's sort of caught in it. And that's why we see the explicate order, according to David Bohm, quantum physicist, that's the surface reality. We see that we see individual things, but underneath what connects them, we're going to talk about the other laws as well, but connection is a very important one. That's underneath, and it's an Akashic realm. So I think it's a very good point, it's a good reason to call this field an Akashic field. But it's not another field, it's not an esoteric separate field. It's the universe as it appears to us, the real universe. The real universe is not flat, it's not just the surface. The real universe has a deeper reality. We know that now in physics, in quantum physics. We have known it in the spiritual dimension. Spiritual masters have always known it. Religious are calling different things, can call it the higher or transcendental reality. The effect is in every case that there is more than what just meets the eye, as Shakespeare says. There's more to this life. And that more we can grasp as a field. In that case, it's an Akashic field.
Beautiful. So this field permeates everything, both seen and unseen, and even what we don't know.
This field is the reality. It is on which is the fishing net, you see. And what we perceive are the things that are on in the net. and that's an illusion. Einstein said that separateness is an illusion. It's only prompted by our perception, sensory perception, when we see separate objects. But when we look deeper, when we look via either the introspection, via the deeper dimension meditation, or we go look through the lens of science, we see that the surface reality is not the real reality. To believe that it is what nowadays called the naive realism. You just believe everything is the way you just present it to the eyes and to the ears. There is more to this. And the Akashic field is the field that connects. It's also, if you like, and get into that, it's also a field that remembers, because nothing gets ever lost in this Akashic field. That means in the universe itself, it's nothing that ever gets lost. And also what evolves. So I thought it would be a good thing to put these things together and to show people that what we have considered for thousands of years as a deep dimension is actually the quantum dimension of the universe. And it's a field, it's a quantum field.
So as an example from what I heard there is the quantum particles don't make up the field. The field generates the quantum particles that then thus create everything and are everything, at least with physical reality and unseen.
Well, the field is dynamic. It's not empty. I mean, you've been talking about space being empty. That was the classical Newtonian notion. You know, mass points are moving about in empty space. That's not true anymore. The new physics, the new science, space is not a vacuum, as even 50 years ago one talked about. The field, the space is a plenum, is a fullness. It is filled. It is filled with zero point energies. It is filled with quantum particles. It is filled with interactions. It's energy. And it's also a dynamic movement. Something moves, and that's not empty space that moves. It's the field. It's the field itself, which is the ultimate higher reality. It's the fishing net itself. And of course, we are a part of that. And there is not just the fish that we catch. There is the net. And there is the ocean in which the net is immersed. So all that we have to recall. There is more to this world than our eyes pick up.
Oh, bravo. That's poetry. And how would you define coherence? I love that word, coherence.
To me, it is probably the most important concept, both in science and in our life. Coherence means that things act together. They are coherent with each other. That means that what happens to one thing has its counterpart, has its effect on the other thing. And it's reciprocal. So what happens elsewhere also affects us. We are part of a coherent universe. That's why we can say we are part of the Akashic field, because all things are connected in and through that field. So coherence means wholeness, means fullness, means completeness. It has all these attributes. If you ask what is the difference between the universe today, let's say 13.8 billion years after the Big Bang, when this process of evolution is believed to have started, what is the difference? The difference is incoherence. At the beginning, there was chaos. Gradually, the universe cooled and quantum particles appeared. Quantum particles, which are non-random, they joined together to create molecules. Molecules created macromolecules, crystals, and cells. In time, on certain surfaces, like on Earth, the cells could join together, creates colonial organisms, sets of cells that act together. These became specialized more and more, created integral organisms. And organisms in turn create, per se, systems, ecologies, societies. So this is an ordering, organizing process from chaos to coherence.
And what is the force or the intelligence that guides all of this?
Well, that's the great question or the great mystery. I think there is more to this universe than random interactions. You know, for several hundred years, let's say 100-150 years at least, or maybe 200 years, in modern science, there was a central dogma which said there is no force, there is no energy beyond what we observe, and what we observe are interactions which are not directed, not conducive to anything. It doesn't have what Aristotle would have called a causal factor, an initial cause or a final cause. Nothing but interactions that blindly moving, creating larger and larger ensembles. If you give it enough time, the universe will emerge out of the interactions, out of blind, random interactions. That was the central dogma. And it turned out lately, in the last few couple of decades, that random interactions would not have been any with any probability at all created the coherent universe that is so amazing, that Einstein called it the most amazing things about the universe, that is so coherent. Could not have. The universe is not long enough in this period since the Big Bang, so that random connections by pure chance would have connected what there is. You know, just to give you an idea, you know the Rubik's Cube, that little cube that you hold in your hand, and you can twist it six sides, and each side has six symbols, colors, sorry. And from a point where it is scrambled, any given point, if you want to turn it so that it goes, gets fully organized, fully ordered, all six sides, you have to go through all the possibilities to be sure that you reach that. That's the mathematics of it. Now, if you assume that it takes 1 second for each move, then you know how long it would take to order a Rubik's Cube. Well, dimensions longer than the age of the universe. So random interactions are not the answer. Now, come back to your question. If randomness is not the governing power, the governing force in the universe, then there is something else that interferes with the otherwise random interactions, these biases, this creates direction. That's something else the religions call higher will, can personify it as the Western idea or the Abrahamic religious idea of God, or take it as an immanent force, as a spirit in the universe, as the Eastern religions talk about, as the great spirit, as the Africans talk about, or Indians also. So there is something. In my work, I try to stay as close to science as possible so that these questions would eventually enter into the domain of science. So I call this, there is an attractor in the universe. We know that when you're dealing with a complex system, and that complex system is not totally incoherent, it was not just anything can happen, anything randomly. If it has some coherence, then what creates this coherence is called an attractor. Different kinds of attractors, ordered attractors, point attractors, periodic attractors, they're also called so-called strange or chaotic attractors. Something is ordering these complex systems if they are coherent, because blind chance alone could not have done it or could not do it. So I say the universe as a whole system, a system of its interacting parts, a system which is rooted in a field, interconnected in the field, then that system has something which we can call an attractor. You can call it the divine will if you like. I think an attractor is what comes in. It is in the domain of science, within the realm of discourse of science. It's an attractor. It's an attractor that moves in a specific direction. It moves toward creating larger systems, coherent systems. That appears that these systems are whole against the background of fractions, of bits and pieces running around. They are wholes. They are larger and larger wholes. A quantum system, an atom is already a whole. A molecule is a whole complex whole. We are incredibly complex wholes, of course. And the ecosystem, the planet as a whole, is a complex and coherent whole. Something is creating planets. Something is creating stars. Something is creating life, living systems on these planets. And that means that there is something that is moving the universe, evolving universe, the universe, towards higher and higher levels of coherence. We feel that when we really go inside into ourselves, we feel it. We feel that we are attracted to each other, attracted to wholeness, attracted to completeness, to fulfillment. We feel that as a sense of belonging, and a higher or deepest level, we feel it as love, love for everything. Not because it's conditional, not because it gives us something, but because we feel that the universe is a loving, a health, a wholeness-oriented universe. That's the great news. That's what's coming forth. So the answer is to what creates this is in us. It's in our field. We can feel it ourselves. When I write these things, I feel that I'm governed in a sense. I am being guided to write it because I feel that coherence. And then if I start exploring that, stating that, then the thing starts flowing out. Then there is coherence appearing also in the ideas. That to me is the miracle that Einstein was talking about. It's the miracle that the great physicist Max Planck was talking about, that there must be a higher force behind the atom, he said. So behind everything. So this is the new concept of the universe, the new paradigm, I like to call it, the new paradigm of reality, of evolution toward wholeness and coherence is a key concept in this.
God, you bring tears to my eyes. It's so beautiful, humbling. I bow in reverence. Nothing would exist without it. And then it makes me wonder why, because I have a mind. And I guess I project perhaps just for the love of it to be creative. It's curious. And maybe if I embody those qualities, then I am in greater alignment with this fundamental force.
Well, Paul, you put your finger on it exactly. This question of aligning or being coherent. I would say, you know, I distinguish just for the sake of analysis two coherence, the coherence which is intrinsic to a system, which means all its parts are coherent so that the whole system becomes a whole system. And there's extrinsic coherence, which means that the system is coherent with its environment. Where everything is connected with everything else, the environment of any given system is simply all the other systems and their environment. Because we are all really part of this largest whole, which we call the cosmos. So yes, this is the important element in our life, in our future, in our destiny, to recognize that we are coherent, bound entities that can be, however, disguided, misguided, misdirected toward chaos, toward blind fighting, toward disregarding the oneness which is already emerging around us. Has been emerging, of course, for millions of years. But it's there. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't. The Earth, the biosphere, is a fantastically coherent, fantastically ordered system. Only the human species is creating a serious disturbance in it. This is technologies that is deploying without recognizing the negative effects. Always think of the local effect, the immediate effect, making money, having more power. But the rest of what it does to the coherence of the system is now beginning to be recognized more and more, and I hope it will be, because our future lies in that direction. That's the key to our future, to become coherent with the world around us, with the biosphere, with the web of life.
Yes, and in the scheme of things, we've only been a cosmic nuisance for a nanosecond, and that nanosecond, if we continue the current path, will be even shorter. Because whatever does not ultimately align in coherence is eliminated because it's not evolving with greater complexity and not a part of the whole. That's how it weeds itself out. That is the definition of evolution and natural selection. It is, right? And is this different than harmony or is that just a synonym?
Well, harmony is a synonym. Is sure, if you think of the universe as music, as a composition of sounds, of course, then harmony is coherence. And disharmony, cacophony, is incoherence and is the negative element in it. Let's try to add There is no living species that would be oriented toward this coherence. It would be eliminated. It is eliminated by natural selection. But the human species has been oriented toward, at least toward disregarding coherence and operating on a short-term basis, just us, me, always, comes first, and never mind the rest, sort of. But I'll be relatively little concerned with the rest. And that is sort of what you'll call in science, you'll call it sub-optimizing the system, optimizing one part at the expense of the whole. And that is a very bad, poor politics, a poor, poor policy to behave in the system as though you would be alone in it, and as though you'd just be competing with strangers. There are no strangers, there are no others. We are this universe. We are life. We are the web of life. It's in us. But we have the power to destroy it, at least on this planet. We have the power. We have these fantastic technologies that can be used for the good, can be also used for destruction. And it is here. We have the choice. Other systems don't have the choice. Other living beings, if they are not coherent, they get eliminated. We are not coherent, and we maintain our incoherence by technologies, artificially bolstering our own interests at the expense of the others. That's why we see the climate problem. That's why we see the aridity. That's why we see the massive extinctions. That's why we see the gap between humans and non-humans, between rich and poor, between one society, one culture, and another. These are all signs of incoherence. And it will be important to recognize that this is artificial. This is a human mistake. It's not part of nature. Aligning with coherence, that's part of nature. And that's the way forward. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that is the key forward. That is the key to be aligned with the Akashic field, where all things act together.
Thank you. And you and I are both pianist composers. I love the metaphor of music. And in every great symphony and song and piece, there is dissonance and then resonance. So we do have dissonant times. We have dissonant moments. You couldn't have just one. You couldn't have harmony without dissonance and the polarity of the other. And I wonder, I know this will probably be an unpopular perspective, perhaps from an egoic standpoint, but maybe we are a mutation like a cancer cell. And while some of the cells are more conscious, trying to convince the collective cancer to curve its ways into sustainability, which is a nice word to not be extinct, if the greater cancer, which it currently is on the planet by any objective means, our humanity, doesn't align itself, then the total field, the body, will eliminate the cancer. The earth will not be killed by the cancer or the universe. So there is a metaphor there too, because cancer cells are out of control, and because they are into blind growth and a narcissistic sort of only its own interests in a human form, if unchecked, it will destroy the host organism. I don't think we're big enough to do that to the planet. Does that jive for you in a line?
Well, I mean, at root, ask yourself, what is a cancer? I think in the new directions, in the new medicine, what talks about information as a key. And a cancer means a break in information. It's a breakdown of the connection between a group of cells and the rest of the organism. If there would be connection, normal connection, the group of cells would be embedded in the organism and will be part of the coherence of the organism. Every group of cells in a viable system operates in tune with all the other cells of the system and with its environment. That's why it's viable. Now, cancer is a breakdown of this coherence. It means that that group of cells is only reproducing itself. It can do that for a while, but sooner or later it creates a problem, and if it's not changed, not cured, then it will kill the system, the host system. So yes, we could be, and we have been becoming a cancer on this planet. But we are a conscious cancer. We are not a blind one. We are one that can recognize who we are and what we are. We can also recognize that we have the power to add to coherence. We have the power to align ourselves powerfully. We have the power to create systems which have coherence, which, by allowing them to develop and facilitating their development. And creating a beautiful garden doesn't mean that you create every flower in that garden. It means that you create the conditions under which the plants can flower in the garden. Allowing this to happen, facilitating the growth, the evolution of coherence around us. That, I think, is really what gives meaning to our life. That is the purpose of our existence.
I agree. And lately I've been saying I want to see the race, and also I'm focusing on myself, to be a good harmonic steward. I like the word steward of this garden, which is the earth. We pass through it. It was given. It'll be here when I'm gone, is this. I want to be a good steward of the resources and the sacred planet while I'm here, both individually and hopefully, like with this show, and in other ways, a part of it, a part of the greater coherence. And how does the listener, how do they place themselves in alignment with this higher vibrational aspects of this field and thus life, so that they personally can benefit from the beauty of this? You and I know it firsthand, and it's ever evolving. How can they start, for someone who's just new to this, who's intrigued or has that call in their heart that's saying, yes, yes, what steps can they take to begin to the process, because it never ends, so that they can feel this, so they don't have to just hear us about it?
Well, the great spiritual systems and religions of the world, the genuine religions, not the rituals, not the dogmas, but the real spirit of religions and spirituality, that those have always been talked about, allowing ourselves to become one, allowing ourselves to feel aligned with what is around us, what we call the aesthetic experience, what we call sort of being turned on, I don't mean just simply by sexual motives, but being turned on by something beautiful that we see, by poetry, by nature, by feeling oneself attracted, allowing that, pausing for a moment and having the surface. Well, the great systems have always been telling that is meditation, that is prayer, that is becoming one with the universe. Sounds awfully spiritual, and it is. And I'm a scientist coming from there, but I recognize that we have in us this attractor. That's my key point. We have in us an attractor that makes us coherent within us and with our environment. If we could only allow it to guide us. Others are guided subconsciously because they don't have the power of consciousness to become aware of this guidance. We have even that. We have the power to recognize that in us is a guiding holotropic attractor, something that moves us to our coherence, to our oneness, expressed as a sense of belongingness, sense of home, sense of oneness, and ultimately as a sense of unconditional love. That, I think, is the way forward. If we have that experience, and we can have it through art, through music, through dance, through communing with other people around us, through what the Japanese now call forest bathing, just going into the forest and feeling oneself part of it. Going, as you know, you live on a beach on a beautiful place in Florida, and I live in Tuscany, but I also see the Mediterranean from my house. Feeling that is easier when there's beauty surrounding us. But wherever we live, we have to look up the sky and feel it. We have to see a tree, see a plant, and see the goodness in each other because it's there underneath. We can be the positive factor, changing from a negative one. Yes, we need to change. We have the consciousness, we have the technologies. What we need to develop is the will, the recognition of the importance of this for each one of us, for all of us together, and also for future generations.
Beautiful. And when you talked about creating the conditions for other things, I feel like silence is the bedrock the environment for these beautiful intuitions and expressions that come forth from us, that whether in nature or sitting in meditation, that they come forward in silence because they're subtle, they whisper, they're not loud. I wonder too if that's our intuition is just sacred whispers from this field.
You know, Paul, interesting you mentioned that. In the late 1990s, just before the year 2000, I wrote a book, was my first book on this topic. It's titled The Whispering Pond. And I wrote a poem for it, which I still use. I can send it to you by email if you like. I wrote about the pond that is larger than all of us, and the pond that unites the trace that we leave, the wake that we leave as we pass, and as these waves that coalesce with each other. And indeed, so the subtle effects, the subtle energies, the attractor itself is a subtle energy. It's not, the quantum physics is very clear about it. It's not vectorial. It's not a push and pull effect. It's an informational effect. You know, what's the difference between, let's say, a homeopathic remedy and a chemical, biochemical remedy? In a homeopathic remedy, it doesn't produce a molecular change. It produces information. A chemical, biochemical remedies, of course, are actually change the chemistry of that particular aspect or part of the body. But these informational treatments, informational remedies are becoming recognized, and they're very important, because we are all based on correct, coherent information, reacting, responding to each other, and together facing the world around us as an element, as a force, as an evolutionary force toward oneness.
And wasn't that basically an example of what we've been talking about, me tapping into that field and being informed? And it's not a coincidence, it's a synchronicity that you had already written about it, literally. I feel like that's the kind of thing that happens when you're in that flow and it operates through you. You just happen to know stuff. You had a great bit in the book about Akashic agency and purpose. Will you talk a little bit about that? I thought that's very applicable and it was quite profound.
You know, I'm afraid you know more about the book by now than I. Because once I write a book, I don't usually read back. I know the ideas, of course, behind it. I don't know the phrasing. I'm glad that you found it interesting. If you like to quote and cite something, and I'll give you my opinion on it.
Oh, you're really channeling, and I've noticed this over the years that you've been coming on. I think that you just open yourself up and you become a high-functioning dictation machine for these beautiful concepts to come out of you. And that kind of explains the prolific nature of what you do. And I don't mean to demean that the universe needs you to take the dictation, or the ideas would still be floating around in the abstract. So I see where you're coming from.
Absolutely. That's the heritage of my musical background, you know, as a child, as a young person. I mean, I know I can let myself immersed in an experience which then takes over and goes. And when I speak about other things, sometimes the ideas just start flowing. Sometimes when I write, it starts flowing. If they don't, then I better let go, and then it's, something is not right. If you are right, then if you are in tune, then of course, then the things take over. The dynamism of the world, of being, takes over the process of becoming.
Oh, well said. And it sounds like books like Yogananda's autobiography of Yogi and also Gibran's The Prophet came from the same place as you're creating from, and all of us are, and all creation exists. And Irvin, at its core, is it all just infinite, unimaginable love? And so then if this is true, that must mean we are too.
We are, basically, yes, we are. It's a loving universe. It's a coherence-oriented universe. And we are a part of it. But it's we are down at the same time, to be realistic, we are down close to the critical point when things can become irreversible. On a negative level, we can just destroy so much without reaching that point where we say it's too late to turn back. We're not there yet, but things are not looking good if we would continue the way we have been. What the lesson it tells us, teaches us, is we've got to change, transform, improve. And the term I use, I like to use for this, is adopt a new way of thinking and acting, which I call the new paradigm. Not the old mechanistic paradigm, the new paradigm of subtle energy, information, coherence, and love. It's all part of the new paradigm.
And I like that you pointed that out, so we just don't dwell in the realm of the Pollyanna. In a universe full of galaxies and changing supernovas and colliding, even if we do go extinct, why does it even matter? Why, I'm not saying everything isn't sacred. It's just life and the energy changing forms. Another show closes, a new one opens. A door closes, a new one opens. This, we had a micro run. The Earth had a nice maybe 20 billion year run. I'm not worried about the Earth, as I said before. We have the opportunity to climb to higher ground and live on and maybe create and co-create unseen miracles and beauty in the world. But if we don't, and we go the way of the mammoth or some microbe, what's the tragedy in all that?
Well, these are deep spiritual questions that have no yes or no answers. But my hunch is, my guess is, that this coherence-oriented universe is not just a plain physical attractor, that there is something behind it which has an element that we could recognize as consciousness, as mind. Maybe all this development is part of a development in which higher and more profound, or deeper, you might also say, levels of consciousness are emerging. And if that is the case, that there is a really a higher consciousness, a cosmic consciousness, which is a conclusion some of the greatest physicists and scientists have reached. If that is true, then the extermination, the exhaustion, the disappearance of a human species would be a very strongly felt, a strong negative factor. Because surely there are other highly intelligent species, perhaps some considerably more evolved than we are. But it cannot be very many statistically. The universe, its evolution so far, is not likely to have produced many of these systems, statistically many, I say. The universe is very, very large, almost inconceivably large. The number of planets that are in it, even the number of planets capable of supporting life, is enormous. So to think that we're alone would be a fallacy, would be silly. But it may be that this movement toward coherence, toward oneness, expressed as love, that this is not purely by chance, it's not purely meaningless. Maybe there is a higher meaning to it. What is the meaning of the purpose? I say the purpose is to reach higher and higher level of coherence. But what is the meaning of the purpose? That's a true spiritual question. And we just have to sit back and let our intuition take over. But I think that there may well be a higher meaning behind it.
Oh, I love that. And I agree. I just wanted to ask the question. And I would say, given this incredible opportunity on this miraculous planet, perfectly positioned from the sun, teeming with infinite life, and here we are, you, me, the listener, it would be so sacrilegious and disrespectful to whatever it is if we didn't seize the day, carpe diem, and give our best from the highest place together and individually to see what beauty we could create through love. And I feel like anything short of that is a slap in the face of the divine itself.
Well, if these feelings, these intuitions that you're now expressing would spread, and perhaps they are spreading, but if they would spread in time and sufficiently to really create change, then that is the greatest good news that we could possibly have. That's the real evolution. But it's still, at this point, we can hope and we can act. We can try to participate to make it spread and to become it, as Gandhi says, become the change we want to see. Like you are becoming it when you're expressing these ideas. That's the change we need. That's the new paradigm that we need.
Oh, thank you. And for me, the virtue is in the trying, not the result.
That's right. We cannot control it. This is not a mechanical system. Maybe it's through a switch and then it gets its job done.
Well, I can't thank you enough as a mentor, a teacher, a friend, an ally, an advocate. It's an honor, and I just look forward to our conversations like Christmas. Thank you, and thank you for the unbelievable amount of goodwill and light and love you've put into this field and continue to. And I pray you will stay safe, productive, sane, and joyous.
Thank you, Paul. We need people like you. That's the hope for the future. And I trust that you represent the best in humankind, and the best will come forth and conquer.
You've been listening to the What Matters Most podcast, a 100% listener-supported program. If you feel inspired, please go to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/whatmattersmost and join our family. So until the next time, stay inspired and in the light.